Do you remember learning to snap? Whenever I saw it, I would do it like this, right? And that never worked. And remember as kids, you try all kinds of movements trying to copy what you see. And then when it finally clicks, how excited you get. You ever think about where the sound actually comes from when you snap? And Jared was trying to explain it right there. For a long time, I thought it was just friction between the fingers, but it's not. Somebody pointed this out to me, and I thought, I'd never really thought about this, about how it works. The sound when you snap is from your finger hitting your palm. If you put some kind of pad in there, it doesn't work. And I never realized that. And it made a lot of sense once I thought about it. But the weird thing is, my brain acted like I knew how snapping worked. Our brains act kind of funny sometimes. They work in unusual ways, sometimes to protect ourselves from feeling bad about ourselves. Like with a snapping. We just assume we know how it works. Somebody says, do you know how snapping works? Yes. Tell me where the sound comes from. I think it's somewhere. I never really thought about it. Or, do you know how a zipper works? I think we'd all say, yes, I know how a zipper works. And then somebody says, explain it. I go, it goes up and closes and down and opens. Yes, but how does that work? One show that the boys and I like to watch is called Brain Games, and it explains some of the weird things that our brains do and how they work. And one episode was about how our brains make us forget that we don't know some things. It fills in some of the gaps, almost like artificial confidence, that we know enough about something that our brain says, that's okay, you got it, you know enough, just don't worry about this any further and move on. And so a thing like a zipper, we know how it works, we kind of have a general idea of how it closes and opens. Our brain says, you've got enough, let's not worry about that. Somebody asks if you know how it works, you say yes. By the way, if you ever looked closely at parts of a zipper, there's a little indent on the top and there's a little bump on the bottom, and the mechanism they move actually stacks them kind of like cups and then breaks them apart. I don't know if you knew that. The Brain Games episode had to explain it to me after I first said, yeah, I know how a zipper works. You know, our brains want to fill in some of those gaps, make us feel like we know more than we really know. I think we weren't always like that. The reason I say that is, I have three people in my life that are very good at knowing what they don't know and trying to find out more. If you have kids around you, you realize there are a lot more questions flowing than when you hang around adults. I've really been appreciating, especially this year, I've mentioned the boys have started daily Bible readings. They read a chapter a day, and to make sure that reading's getting done, among other things, they tell us about what they've read every day. And a lot of questions come out about texts that maybe I've not given a second thought about in a long time. but maybe it's the first time they've read it, or maybe they just have a little more inquisitive minds than I do now. And they're asking questions about, why does it say that? What does it mean? And sometimes, well, it's something that I've thought about a lot and have really worked through and can give a very clear answer. And other times, I have to stop and say, okay, I've heard that. I've taught that. How do I explain it to a 9-year-old, 11-year-old, 7-year-old? And as I work through it, okay, maybe I hadn't broken this down as quickly. Maybe I've moved quickly through it. Our text this morning from Deuteronomy 6, I think, plays on some of these ideas of the inquisitive nature that kids have, and that maybe that adults should. In Deuteronomy 6, starting at verse 20, after we've gone through, remember, the story of God's providing for Israel, we've gone through the Ten Commandments, and we've gone through the, we'll call the Shema, the call to love God with our whole lives, to remember the commandments in all the parts of our day. We've talked about what proper fear of God means and how that relates to God's love and even uncomfortable words like jealousy and anger. And it's given the warning not to test God and not to turn away. And then in verse 20 it says, in the future, when your son asks you, what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws the Lord our God has commanded you? And it says what to tell him. It anticipates there's going to be a time where you're going to have to explain these things. And it puts it in the framework of children asking, why do we do those things? Why do we follow those laws? Why do we do those practices? I think it's a blessing sometimes to be around young, inquisitive minds. It reminds us that we ought to be older, inquisitive minds. It reminds us that we do things for a reason. That when we come together to worship, when we come together to serve, when we do the things that we do as a church, the wee stuff that Don was talking about, we do them for a reason. And sometimes we do them over and over and over again, and we forget to stop and ask, why are we doing this? Where did it come from? Until somebody that doesn't know any better says, what's this about? And it's a good thing to stop and to evaluate, reassess. Not in the form of a challenge or to pick apart something, but to help us appreciate the things we do and what brought us here. Because look at the answer that comes from this. When your son says, what is the meaning of this? Why do we do it? Tell him, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord set miraculous signs and wonders, great and terrible, upon Egypt and Pharaoh and his whole household. But he brought us out from there to bring us in and give us the land he promised on oath to our forefathers. The Lord commanded us to obey all these decrees and to fear the Lord our God so that we might always prosper and be kept alive, as is the case today. And if we are careful to obey all this law before the Lord our God, as he has commanded us that will be our righteousness. We're reminded that the answer to why do we keep the laws, why do we do the things the Bible says, isn't because God said so. That's an easy answer. It's a good parent answer. Why? Just do it. This reminds that there's something bigger. That there is a relationship there. There's a history there. We ask these questions and we look at these things we do to appreciate what brought us here to this place. It reminds us of the relationship and of that background and of who God is. You know, we went to Deuteronomy for about a month here. And we spent some time looking at some texts that maybe are not our first impulse as Christians to look at. Talking about laws that we don't follow anymore, New Testament era. Looking at some practices that we don't do. Looking at a community that we don't really identify ourselves with. When we talk about Israel, of course, we talk about being the people of God and the things we share there. And so it can seem strange looking at a book like Deuteronomy for a New Testament church. But what we see when we look in this book is the character and personality of God. We see the mighty acts, and we are reminded and these ways that the relationship between God and His people are discussed and dwelt on and laid out. And it is something that we can feel a kinship to. It is an approach that I think we can benefit from. We talked at the beginning of this about figuring out what we can say with confidence about what matters most, about where we come from and where we are going. We talked some about coming up with the ways of reminding ourselves. And the computer just restarted. So we just lost our home, people, I think. Oh, dear. I'll send something out about that later. We see this community of God's people trying to live like it, trying to remind each other, trying to make it so as they are about to do something very big and very new, as they're about to go from living in the wilderness where they have to fully depend on God to going into the land where it will feel optional. It'll feel like there are other ways, but they still needed to be reminded they have to be fully dependent on God. They're trying to help each other manage that. And sometimes that looks like asking questions. Sometimes that looks like curiosity. Sometimes that looks like picking apart the words and finding out the reasons. And sometimes we get a little nervous saying that sort of thing, but I don't think we should. It kind of reminds me of when I was an undergrad, I was part of a club called Epsilon Theta Chi. And I ended up being the president of the club for a year and a half. And so I got to run Pledge Week. I got to be the one put it all together. And we were a fairly young club. We had only been around for a couple of years. And so I wanted to make sure that we are emphasizing the things that mattered most about who we were. We talked about, to our group, our core values, reverence and unity, service, excellence, and trust. And I told the guys who are already in the club, and even more importantly, I told the guys who were pledging, everything that we do here should have something to do with one of our five values. And I told them, if anybody asks you to do anything during Pledge Week, feel free to ask them which of the values this relates to. And if they can't give you an answer, you don't have to do it. It gave us as a club a guiding principle of why we do what we do. And I said, and the answer can't be because I had to do it, or some general is going to make you closer, or something like that. When you are a part of a body that is supposed to be about something, like I felt the club was meant to be, and like the church is certainly supposed to be, we need to be able to clearly express why we are about those things, why we do the things we do. We have our scripture to give us authority and information about the things we do. We have our faith and the things that we know to be true about who God is and what Christ did and still is doing to inform those questions. And I think we are better for learning. I told you that recently I read through the Chronicles of Narnia series and trying to resist the urge to always be talking about things from there. Mostly do it. Today I'm not going to resist. There's an exchange in Prince Caspian between Lucy and Aslan. Not familiar, Aslan, the lion, the creator of Narnia, very much the representative of God and often Christ in the series. And Aslan had not been seen for a while. And Lucy was the first one who saw him. And when he finally reveals himself, she runs to him and gives him a hug and says, "Aslan, you've grown." And his response was, "I grow as you do. Every year that you grow bigger, I will grow bigger to you as well." The idea being that as we grow as Christians, as we learn more, the result will be God's going to be bigger. The more that we understand about God, the more we're going to realize just how big, how powerful, how strong our God is. And I think we see that at the early ages and when we first are baptized and we first learn. I think it's very clear to see that. I think sometimes we lose that in the same way that we lose the curiosity that we talked about the children have. I think sometimes as we grow, as we get older, maybe God does not necessarily get smaller in our eyes, but maybe, better word is tidier or more manageable. We start to get our ideas of this is what God is. And we go from our early statements of God is just so big and I can't even wrap my mind around all the things God does to, well, we've got our lessons that we teach somebody when we're doing a Bible study, and here are the steps I'm going to take them through, and we expect by the end of that they're going to be ready to make a decision, and we get everything nice and tidy and clean, and we have our very clear presentation of this is what God is. Here, take a look. And perhaps we lose some of that awe. And some of that that curiosity that leads to God growing bigger. Well, Maybe it is that we haven't grown. Maybe our brain has filled in the blanks for us. Deuteronomy is a book that is very much about getting ready to go on and do more. And I pray that as a church, we are always in that position. And no matter how much we have accomplished, that we are ready, with God at our side, to go do something. To go be more. They're about to take the land. It's not going to be easy. But they know who's with them. I pray that as a church, we can keep our curiosity about the things of God. I pray we can have healthy questioning of the things we do. Why do we do these things? Are they effective? What can we do? Because God doesn't stand still. And he doesn't call his people to either. His people spent those 40 years wandering, not because God wanted them to stay where they were, because they were getting ready. But they were never meant to stay. God had bigger things. So we're going to move on to a different text for next week. We're going to move on to a new book. We're going to spend some time in the New Testament. Might be more familiar ground. But I hope to keep these ideas of God's people standing at the edge of something great. And keep these ideas of God's people reaching out, wanting to know more, as we go and do all the things that we do as a church. That's all for this morning. We will see next week what our new text is. This is the time that we're going to sing a song, and this is family time, I've said many times. If there's anything anybody needs, prayers, hugs, we have a functioning, water-filled baptistry now. There are guys doing a lot of good work. Anything you need, please come forward and let us know as we stand and sing.
Jesus, are you fully trusting in his grace? This are you in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood, cleansing blood?